And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We have a very full and exciting week of morning show interviews, and certainly that is the case as we begin the week with Dr. Jeffrey Weiss, who is the superintendent of the Kenosha Unified School District. And of course, it is always a challenge to be the superintendent of a school district as large and complex as Kenosha. And of course, for anybody who is in the business of public school education, these are really, really challenging times due to really sometimes crushing financial challenges that that confront school districts all over the state of Wisconsin, and really all over the country, of course, for that matter. And the Kenosha Unified School District has certainly faced more than its share of financial challenges. And towards that end, and in the hopes of addressing what is otherwise a looming deficit projected to be in the neighborhood of $19 million, the Kenosha Unified School District is putting before the public an operational non-recurring referendum, which voters will decide upon on the 18th of February. And Dr. Weiss is here ahead of that and ahead of a couple of town hall meetings that are coming up in the near future in which the citizens of the Kenosha Unified School District can come and ask questions of their own and get more information about this really important referendum. But in the meantime, I'm so glad that in his incredibly busy schedule, Dr. Weiss is making time to be part of the morning show today to answer some of the questions that I have and that that I suspect many of you have as well about this referendum, again, coming up on the 18th of February. Dr. Jeffrey Weiss, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We have talked once before on the morning show, and I think that conversation came shortly after you began with Kenosha Unified, and I remember that conversation was dominated to an extent by the matter of the COVID-19 pandemic and what your previous school district, South Milwaukee, had done to contend with that, and kind of the ripple ramifications that really are not done even now. I mean, we're in many respects, a lot of the young people who came through that are still feeling the effects of that. And I should think, for instance, the Kenosha Unified School District, there are still ways in which you still feel the pain of that experience.
Yeah, for no doubt. That really was a traumatic experience for many of our students and our families. And I feel we're definitely on the other side of it. But there's still impacts of that that we feel every now and then. So for sure, that's an issue that we deal with.
Right. I on Saturday was, Friday actually, I was doing interviews for a wonderful scholarship that Carthage offers to Kenosha residents. And in more than one of the interviews that I conducted with some of these high school seniors, the topic of COVID mm-hmm. came up. And for them, that would have been something they experienced in middle school. Right. And I get the sense that if you were that young or at that particular point in time, which is already difficult for most young people, you throw in something as devastating as COVID, as disruptive as COVID, and there's just no telling the way in which the trajectory of one's life could be changed.
Right, absolutely. Even though it was 5 years ago now that pretty much when everything hit, just coming up on 5 years, but the impacts will always be there, I'm sure.
Right. Well, of course, we're here to talk about something else that is quite significant. And as you were indicating to me before we went on the air, it has been, in a sense, kind of an all-consuming matter for you and many of your colleagues, your staff. And that is this referendum that is coming up on the 18th of February. And so we certainly want our listeners to come to maybe an even better understanding of why you and the school board see this as an absolute necessity. So maybe we should start in the most brutal fashion with the numbers.
Sure.
And sort of talk about where the school district is right now and why, and then why or how and why this referendum then was crafted.
Sure.
As a potential remedy.
Sure, absolutely. So what is going to be on the ballot on February 18th is a non-recurring, so it's for a limited time period, a five-year referendum in the amount of $23 million a year for that five-year period. And that really breaks down to be about $19 to $20 million for retaining staff, keeping programs, and doing what we can to keep our educational experience the same at the high level for our students and families moving forward. And we also have $3.5 million or so in that referendum for safety enhancements. And a lot of that, the push for adding the safety enhancements really is a result of the November incident that occurred at Roosevelt Elementary. And having those controlled entrances in place at Roosevelt Elementary was a real key safety measure for us. So this would also allow us to add those controlled entrances to seven schools in the districts that do not have controlled entrances at this time. So it's a mix of operations and also a mix of safety enhancements as well.
One of the ways in which this referendum is described is, and I hope I'm understanding the terminology correctly, that this is an operational referendum versus a capital referendum. Explain what that distinction is.
Sure, absolutely. Operational referendum, there's two types of referenda that districts can go to in the state of Wisconsin. One is capital, which would be building. So the school, Kenosha Unified, did go for a capital referendum back in 2015, and that was to build the athletics facilities at Bradford and others around the city. That was a capital referendum. The operational referendum is for operations. It's just for that. It's to keep the operations of the school district moving, and it's really for paying the bills is what an operations is. The reason why Kenosha Unified's in this position, and just last year across the state, just to provide a bit of context, there are 421 school districts in the state of Wisconsin. Last year, 147 districts in 2024 went for an operational referendum. So that doesn't count in. There were more than that. There were well over 200 referendum questions in the state, but 147 were for operations. And school districts across the state, including Wisconsin, are in this position because the state funding formula just hasn't kept up with inflation now, going on probably 12 or 13 years. The increases that we're getting from the state, and really that's the only way that we can get more revenue, is through the state of Wisconsin or through a referendum. And the revenue limit just has not been increased enough, the amount that the state will allow us to basically tax to get more revenue. That hasn't kept up with inflation now for going on 12 years.
Wow. There's also another matter closely related, but I don't think it's exactly the same matter, and that's the matter of the actual, there's actual, or maybe it is the same, but this matter of a figure, a fixed figure for instance, the Kenosha Unified School District versus other school districts. And if you go on the website for KUSD that explains the referendum, we see this figure of 11,349. And that's a relatively modest figure compared to other school districts. Explain what that number means.
Sure. That is the amount of funding that Kenosha Unified gets per student. And the way that our budget's figured out is we take that 11,431, 39, we multiply it by the three-year average of our student count. And districts around the state do that as well. Back in 1993, that number was set. The revenue limits were put in place in 1993 across the state to keep as a form of property tax savings, to hold the line on property taxes. So every district in the state was frozen at their 1993 levels, and increases on that have come from there. So districts like Kenosha, that was more fiscally conservative in their school spending, was locked into that rate in 93. A school district like Madison is well over $14,000 per student. So that kind of gives you an idea, and that also includes any operational referenda that were added on as well. So the state funding formula from 1993 till about 2010 did keep pace with inflation. Since 2010, that hasn't happened. And that's why we're in the situation, as well as many other districts in the state are.
Right.
We are today.
And just to offer clarity to our listeners, when we're talking about that $11,349, that's not in a sense, a check that Madison is writing.
Correct.
That's in a sense, our money.
Correct. Yep, a mix of, it all is taxpayer money. It's a mix
right.
of, that comes from the state and comes from local property taxes. So I like to think of it as a coffee cup. If you have a 20-ounce coffee cup, you get a portion of that filled up with state aid, and the other portion's filled up with local property taxes. The revenue limit determines how big that cup can be.
Hmm.
So the state will say that we've invested more money in state aid than ever before, and that can be true, but it doesn't change the amount of funding the district gets. It just changes the mix that's in our revenue limit or in our coffee cup. So
right. And it also doesn't necessarily change the reality of a shortfall.
Correct.
When there is simply not enough money available for all the things that you want to do and or need to do.
Absolutely.
For those of you just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Weiss, who is the superintendent of the Kenosha Unified School District. And we're talking primarily today about the referendum that will be put before Kenosha voters on the 18th of February. And before we're done, we will remind people of two town hall meetings that are coming up, one on Thursday, January 30th, so this coming Thursday, the other the following Tuesday, February 4th, two opportunities to get still more questions answered about this. Let's just probe a little further into the whole matter of this projected deficit, and was I correct, $19 million?
19, is that right. 19
the,
plus.
The unhappy number.
Correct.
One of the things that is spelled out pretty clearly on the website is the fact that it's not as though you and the school board and staff were just kind of sitting around twiddling your thumbs and now suddenly we have a deficit. I mean, there have been urgent concerns about finances for quite some time, and some very, very dramatic moves were made to at least ameliorate some of those concerns. And, of course, some of that involved very public gestures such as the closing of schools and so on. And yet, of course, this deficit is still here. I guess one point is that this deficit could be far worse if some of those measures had not been taken.
Right, absolutely. Last year, we went through a process we called our right-sizing process, and that was to... We looked at the number of students we have versus the number of buildings, and we had excess capacity for our buildings, largely because of birth rate declines that we're seeing across the state of Wisconsin and across the nation. So we did, last year there were seven total, that were either merged or closed, as well as cuts at the central office, district office. And that resulted in a savings of $10 million annually.
Hmm.
So had we not taken those steps, the deficit that we'd be looking at now would be closer to $30 million a year as opposed to the 19. And those cuts were very painful. And it did take there were very emotional cuts to make, and it was very difficult for everyone, for our staff, for our students, for our families. However, they really were necessary in order to make sure we're being as fiscally responsible as we can.
I wonder if we could just revisit that for a moment. I think it would be interesting to hear a little bit about what that process was like in terms of how the school district came to the ultimate decisions it made in terms of which schools to close and or merge. I mean, that had to be, I should think, a great challenge to kind of sort through and figure out the most sensible way to do, you know, what you saw as absolutely inescapable and necessary. How were those ultimate choices made?
Yeah. We looked at a variety of factors when determining which schools would be closed or merged. One of those were, I mentioned controlled entrances in the beginning. Schools that didn't have a controlled entrance, that was part of the overall list of criteria we looked at. We also looked at building utilization and how many students who lived in those boundary areas attended those schools. One of the great things about Kenosha Unified is we do have a lot of choices for our families for education within the Kenosha Unified School District. And there were some schools, for example, that had maybe 60% of the students who lived in the attendance area attend those schools. So that was another factor we looked at. We also had to look at proximity. If one school was closed, how close was the next school that students could go to try to do our best to avoid having super long transportation times. So that's all of those factors really played into it. And back just over a year ago, we brought those options to the board, several options, and it was difficult. It was a very difficult, hard process to go through. But it's one that I really do believe was necessary before we could come to the public and ask for additional funding.
Right, right. So you mentioned the fact that some $10 million was saved just through that right-sizing process. Can you just help us understand how that money was saved?
Sure, absolutely. So it really, schools are about 80% salary and benefits. We're a people-heavy industry.
Sure.
And through that right-sizing and consolidation, there were about 200 full-time positions in the district that were cut, no longer needed. So as we combined schools and as we went through that process, we did consolidate many positions. And that's what really led to the majority of the savings. There were some savings with utilities and facilities savings, but the major savings in any school district comes through staffing.
Right. So those buildings, of course, still exist. Explain kind of what the status is of these. I'm thinking particularly of those spaces, those buildings that are now essentially dormant. I mean, are they standing completely empty? Are they essentially completely unused at this point?
There were some that were repurposed. For example, our Kenosha School of Language is now in the former Stoker building. There's some other moves that we combined a couple of our charters into a choice school at the old Vernon building that's now Ruth Harmon Academy. The other buildings that are currently vacant right now, we did sell the Dimensions of Learning building outright. The other buildings are we actually have a deal tomorrow that's coming before the school board with the city that will transfer many of those properties that we aren't using. There's also some swaps of property in there to the city so the city can redevelop those and we can split any profits after the cost of the redevelopment occurs. So we worked very closely with the city of Kenosha on that, and they've been a great partner. We don't want to have vacant buildings. They don't help neighborhoods. They actually hurt neighborhoods.
Sure.
So working with the city, they've been a great partner, and I'm very glad we were able to do that.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, my guest today on The Morning Show is Dr. Jeffrey Weiss, who is the superintendent of the Kenosha Unified School District. And first and foremost, we are talking about a very important operational non-recurring referendum that comes before the Kenosha public on February 18th. And I neglected to write down kind of the magic number, but what are we talking about in terms of potential total amount of money that is covered by this referendum?
Right. So it is $23 million a year for 5 years. So I've seen it reported as $115 million referendum. But it breaks down to 5 years at $23 million a year.
Right, so just do the math. And one thing that was of interest to me on the website that gives information about the referendum was the answer to an interesting question, which is, what if things change in Madison? That is, what if long-sought changes are made in the formula and that flow of money, in a sense, improves from the current state situation, what would that do? So I'll just give you a chance to explain that.
Yep. So if that does happen, I'll answer that question first.
And it's a big if.
It is a huge if. The school board has the authority not to levy up to the max. So if that did happen, the school board could make the decision to adjust how much is actually levied at the annual meeting. That being said, this is my 11th year as a superintendent. I've gone to Madison every year before a biennium budget, or every other year before the budget process is complete. And the message from school superintendents across the state has been, and school boards, has been very consistent over that period of time, that the state revenue limit just is not keeping up with inflation. Unfortunately, it's fallen on deaf ears, and that's why we're in the situation we're at. I would absolutely love if we had that, if we're in the situation that you just described. However, I am not planning on that.
Right. Yeah, you'd probably be foolish if you did. Mm-hmm. Right. Very good. So let's talk for a moment about what can happen if this referendum does, in fact, pass on February 18th. And obviously, some of those things are important, but in a sense go without saying that you get to keep doing a lot of the things that you're doing now. You get to retain staff, you get to retain programs, maybe even expand a program or two. But I mean, right. This is really about keeping the cylinder spinning and keeping the lights on and keeping the learning going. But I know that beyond that, there are a couple of possibilities that are probably worth our talking about. One of them is something about the implementation of Act 20. Explain to our listeners what this refers to.
Sure. Act 20 is the Science of Reading initiative. That it is, it's a law that was put into place last the summer of 2023, designed to implement best practices in reading instruction and early literacy reading. And the state did set aside some funding for that. The funding that was set aside was mainly for curricular materials to reimburse that. In Kenosha, our expenses coming with the training of staff, and our expenses coming with the getting the testing materials in place. So that's just another caveat. And I want to be very clear. I think this law is an excellent. I'm fully in support of the Science of Reading. I think it is one of the better things to come out of Madison to support public education. I really do. Just want to make sure that it's implemented in a way that doesn't put districts in a financial bind.
Right.
That money is still being tied up in a legal dispute at the state level. So.
This sounds a little bit like what we often hear about unfunded mandates, where a school district is told you will do this, and by the way, you have to pay for it yourself. And not that this is exactly that, but to some extent, each and every school district bears some of the burden of this assignment. Shall we say?
Yep, for sure. Another area that in which that's the case is special education reimbursement. So school districts across the state are, we're required by law, and obviously it's the right thing to do. We want to make sure all students learn as best they can. School districts are reimbursed at 30%, 33%, but because it's some certain instead of some sufficient, it turns to be about 30%. We're reimbursed for those expenses for special education. And that really, the overall budget for that is about $35 million, and we're reimbursed about 30% of that. So
wow.
That'll be another talking point that you'll hear in budget proposals, is to increase that. I've seen 60, I've seen as high as 90. That would have a huge impact for Kenosha Unified and districts across the state. However, that's one of those things where until it happens, it hasn't happened.
Right.
You don't have the money.
Right. I want to circle back to Act 20 for a moment. I'm reminded that, when was this? I think it was either late summer or early fall, we actually did an interesting morning show where we went on site to the new children's library of the Kenosha Public Library on 22nd Avenue. And we're taken around. It's a beautiful facility, and anybody listening who's not seen it needs to really visit it. It's incredible. But it was during that conversation that some really frightening statistics were shared by some of these librarians about at least certain facets of the population of Kenosha in terms of young people, the levels of reading. It's just staggering, the problem. And so, of course, something like Act 20, it's not just a good idea. It's something that has to happen, or all kinds of other things are just going to utterly fall apart.
Absolutely. And it is, as I mentioned earlier, I really am supportive of the methodology behind it. It's just making sure that we can, and I guess my concern about it is that we are able to take full advantage of it.
Right. Yeah, I think the language I saw on the website talks about the ability for KUSD to really fully and equitably implement Act 20. Otherwise, you're going to be forced to sort of pick and choose when this is a program that really needs to be accessible to everybody who needs it in the district.
Absolutely. It's a great opportunity, and I don't want to see us miss it.
Right. Also mentioned, as, and we've already touched on this matter, but I think it's worth talking about in a little more detail, is this matter of building security and certain upgrades that can keep our students and faculty and staff, for that matter, safer. First of all, we kind of brushed past it, but it's certainly possible that we have listeners that are not really aware of what occurred back at, was it Roosevelt Elementary?
Correct.
Yeah. And I think you've made very brief mention of that already, but for the sake of any listeners who are not, who did not hear about that or have forgotten about that, just remind them about what occurred and how scary it was.
Yeah, it was a very scary day. The we had an individual who entered, who actually first began by trying to get into the exterior doors around the Roosevelt Elementary. We were able to see on our camera system, went around, tried all of the exterior doors to gain entry. After not being able to gain entry to those doors, went to the front door, and we do have, when I mentioned controlled entrances, the way those are set up is that there really are, there's kind of a breezeway. There's one set of doors that lead to the outside, and then you enter a little breezeway or vestibule. The office is there where office staff can talk to you, and then there's another set of doors that prevents entry into the hallways. So we did have an individual who was acting very nervous, who was coming in carrying a bag, got into the first set of doors. Office staff and another a student teacher confronted the individual. He got scared and left the building. Later on, found out that the what was in the bag was a airsoft gun, a pellet gun, not a real gun. However, it did cause a lot of concern throughout the community, throughout the district as well. And we began looking at other schools that do not have that controlled entrance. So without that controlled entrance, you would enter right into the hallway, right into classroom, with access to classrooms.
Right.
So, and that's really because when schools were built before Columbine, I guess, would be the big event, anything before that, the principal's office was usually in the center of the building. And there were multiple doors, as many doors as possible, to get students and staff out should there be a fire.
Right.
After Columbine, that thinking changed, and it shifted to how do we make schools as secure and as safe as possible. So we had been, the district had been moving towards constructing as many controlled entrances as possible during that time, but it's very expensive. It's more than just putting in another set of doors. It's relocating an office. It's changing classrooms. It's all of that major remodeling and construction. So to do that for our seven schools that currently do not have controlled entrances, it would be $12.5 million. So as part of the referendum, what we would do is we would take out a loan for that $12.5 million and start construction immediately. We've already begun the design work. We've got the wheels rolling on this. So I would like to be able to, come February 19th, turn the key on the rest of those rest of that work to get those installed as quickly as we can. That, as well as some other safety enhancements. I mentioned the exterior doors. Our facilities department does an amazing job in making sure that those are in great repair. However, I'd like to double down on that and begin replacing those doors. There are some, one of the, and I hate talking about this, but one of the school shootings in Uvalde, it was a prop door. It was a door that wasn't properly closed, led to access to the building. So this is an area that I think is very, very important, and I'd like to make sure that we do all we can to make sure our exterior doors are in are new and in good working order. Salt is probably the biggest enemy of those, just to make sure we're replacing them as quickly and as efficiently as we can.
Right. It's interesting. It's exactly the kind of expenditure that, I mean, it's not like new bleachers for the football stadium or whatever. I mean, there's nothing sexy about just exterior doors, especially exterior doors that nobody ever even sees. And yet, when it comes to taking seriously this matter of keeping students, faculty, and staff safe, you have to think about things like that. And you have to do whatever it takes to ensure that. I'm just curious, in the world of public school superintendents, and of course it's not just public schools that have to worry about this, but I wonder how much exchange of ideas and concerns there is. I'm thinking especially particularly around this matter of how do we keep our students safe.
Right. Yeah, so that's just last week I was at, there was a state school board association meeting in Milwaukee, and the superintendents from the larger school districts in the state got together during that conference. There were about 15 or 20 of us, and this was one of the topics we discussed. And different things that school districts around the state are doing. We kind of shared our thoughts, what's working to that collective so that we're all doing all we can to keep students safe.
We're speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Weiss, superintendent of the Kenosha Unified School District, talking about various issues and concerns related to the referendum that will be voted on by Kenosha citizens on the 18th of February. And one thing that we have not touched on yet is the whole matter of all that goes on in a school district apart from specifically the classroom and classes, but all of the other activities that mean so much to so many students. And of course, the two biggies are the arts and athletics. And I'm sure that when we're talking about this referendum, that's one of the things that needs to be at the forefront of people's minds, because if brutal cuts, even beyond what have already happened, need to occur, that will be two of the areas that will surely be impacted.
Right. And when we go through a budget reduction process like this, everything, I know it sounds cliche, but everything really is on the table. We do have to look at the entire budget if this referendum does not pass. And to make sure that we're doing that, we do need to look at arts and sports and those things that really, those things that I hate to look at because I know how much they mean for our students, to keep them engaged, for our families as points of pride. But we can't, we have to. We have to look at everything.
Yeah. So one of the things that struck me at this last election back in November, following all of the different results, I was actually a little bit surprised, pleasantly surprised, at how many referendums around the state passed. And I wasn't, I suppose, keeping really careful track, and maybe it was by no means the majority, but it kind of felt like it in terms of what was being covered that night. I was really struck. I wonder how much you specifically follow that, the matter of, I mean, you rattled off a number, I think, earlier of the number of districts that have had to do referendums of one kind or another. What is your sense kind of around the state and particularly this part of the state in terms of how successful have these referendums been? To what extent has the voting public been sensitive to the concerns that caused these referendums to be raised?
Sure. Actually, this is another number I have. It was 78% of the referendum questions that were on the ballot in November in the state of Wisconsin were successful.
Wow.
So that is a fairly high number.
That especially seems higher than I would say a few years ago. It just feels to me like 20 years ago, you would not have seen a number like that. It just seems like we were in a different environment then.
Right. And 20 years ago, I would say too, that was the state funding formula was keeping up with inflation. Mm. So it really was a different environment back then. So I don't have the specifics, but I'm guessing that many of those probably were more on the capital side as opposed to the operational side. So,
yeah. I know that one numerical reality that we haven't yet touched on is the matter of enrollment and the fact that enrollment at every kind of school is down because of demographic realities. Just the number of youngsters is down, and we see it at a place like Carthage where I teach, and so that is an inescapable reality. How much does that figure into some of the financial pressures that we are talking about here?
Right, it really does. The unfortunate thing, or not unfortunate, but it's the challenging thing with declining enrollment is that students don't leave the district or not attend the schools in packets of 25 at a grade level. If you have a class of was 28 this year and it goes down to 22 next year, you still need a teacher, you still need all of the things that go into running that classroom and that school. And that extends to transportation costs. If you have a bus that picks up 80 kids and now they pick up 70 kids, you still need a school bus.
And a driver.
And a driver. And.
Yeah.
So that really is one of the challenges with declining enrollment. We have, and this is, I'm not sure if this is on our website or if this is a slide that we just added to our town hall presentations. We've done a fairly good job of being proportional with the reduction of our in student enrollment across all employment categories within a couple percentage points of being able to do that. And that's really was the impetus behind the right sizing. And I really believed as we entered into that there's, and coming out of it, that there's really no way we could have gone for a referendum, or I'd have a much more difficult time justifying it had we not done the best we could to consolidate.
Right. One other matter in terms of what is possible if this referendum on February 18th passes has to do with something else that is sometimes misunderstood by the public, and that is this matter of prep time and teachers having sufficient prep time. And I think the verbiage I saw on the KUSD's website is that this referendum, among other things, can allow the district to provide sufficient and equitable prep time to all teachers. Just explain how important this is and also the way in which this is sometimes very much misunderstood.
Sure, absolutely. And thanks for asking this question, because I think it is important to talk about. And I really see two major benefits of having more prep and professional times for our staff. The first one is the most important, is that it can lead to better instruction in the classroom and higher levels of student learning. We talked a little bit about Act 20, providing more time for our elementary teachers to look at their student data and to plan their instruction will increase student learning when they're able to do that. And to do that, they need to have time to do it. At the secondary level, this is the fifth school district that I've been in, whether I've been teaching, or maybe it's the sixth then, teaching or an administrator. In our high schools, our staff teach 6 out of 7 courses over the day. That's not the case and I hate to admit this, when I was at Maine Township in Illinois, and as an English teacher, I taught 4 out of 9.
Wow.
So that impacts the amount of planning that our staff can do. And 4 out of 9 is an anomaly. I'm not saying that's the norm by any means. However, that time is used to, again, like I said, look at student data, plan instruction, collaborate with other teachers and support staff around student learning. I also think, so that's one is, and the most important is to improve student learning. There's also another component to that, and that's how do we attract and retain the best staff? As I mentioned earlier, if you had a choice to teach between 6 out of 7 and 4 out of 9, chances are you choose the 4 out of 9 just based on the amount of work that has to occur outside the classroom to do that. The best way to improve student learning is to have a great teacher in front of a small class of students. I want to make sure that we keep the great teachers. I don't want to lose, as other districts around us go to referendum, I don't want our teachers here in Kenosha Unified to begin looking and wondering what else is out there. I want them to stay at Kenosha Unified. I want to retain our best, and our students deserve it, our community deserves it, and this is a component of that.
Sure. And if I just may add, as somebody who has, you know, been a teacher myself at the college level, that when it comes to something like having more prep time, it's really not to make the job easier. It's so that you can do the job better, because nothing feels better than to teach and be successful. I mean, and to see your students learning and see them succeeding. And if you are teaching in a situation where that is increasingly difficult to the point of being nearly impossible, it makes all the sense in the world for a teacher to go someplace else where they can really teach, where they know they can make a lasting difference in the lives of their students.
Absolutely. That's very well said. Very well said. Thanks.
Well, I've been there and done that and been on kind of both sides of that situation. So we do want people to understand that's also, mm-hmm. you know, kind of the part of the mix of all of this. One other thing I wanted to be sure to ask you about, and perhaps it's something that some of our listeners have heard about, was a recent, not exactly a closing, but a school in the school district that is no longer in the school district. And this happened quite recently. And I wonder if you could just explain what is behind that. I don't think that directly has anything to do with the matter of the referendum.
But. Right. No, this is a totally different topic. The K-Tech was a charter school within the district. And this gets kind of confusing, so I'm going to take a little time to explain this. Let me begin with what a charter is. A charter is pretty much just a contract between an outside entity and, for us, it was a school district, to run a school in that area. And as part of that contract, the funding that the district received was split between that outside entity and the district to run K-Tech. And the district had several charters that operated that way that were part of KUSD, and they're called instrumentality charters if they're part of the school district. Mm. We the district came across some violations of that charter. One was in the area of how funds were being logged in, how they were being commingled between the one school that was part of the district, and then there's also the K-Tech High School, which is not part of the district.
Mm.
And so those funds are being commingled, and that's a violation of the charter. So we talked to the K-Tech Governance Board, and we reached a mutual agreement to dissolve our charter, and that's effective January 27th.
So mid-year.
Correct. And that was, again, specified in the charter contract. That it would occur at the end of the semester, the academic semester. So as of January 27th, what was formerly known as K-Tech K-8 is now Lakeview K-8 Academy. Hmm. And this really, same location, same staff, same students, same program. We are looking to add some more STEM offerings to that school. And it's also going to be part of, we want to create and tighten the alignment between Lakeview K-8 and Lakeview High School.
Ah.
So Lakeview High School was just recently ranked by U.S. Reports as the number 2 high school in the state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
So something we're very proud of. Has some excellent STEM offerings at Lakeview High School, and we see this as a natural alignment between those two programs.
Very good. Thank you for offering some information on that. So let's close by reminding our listeners of these two town hall meetings coming up, one this coming Thursday, January 30th, 10:30 in the morning at the Educational Support Center there on 52nd Street, the other the following Tuesday, so a week from tomorrow, February 4th, 5:30, at Lance Middle School. So are you there at these town hall meetings?
Yes, I am. We have about a 35, 40-minute presentation, and then the remainder of the time is set aside for questions. And we're asking, we have it set up so that participants or attendees can type in their questions, and we'll answer them. And the reason for that is then we have a list of all the questions.
Mm.
And on our website, that's part of our FAQ section. So all those questions that are typed in, we do have an answer for, and we do have that up and available for people to check out.
Great idea. And again, you can get even more information about all of this on the KUSD's website. And if you go to kusd.edu/district/referendum, there is a plethora of information that can help you understand better all of the different things that we have talked about today. Dr. Jeffrey Weiss, superintendent of the Kenosha Unified School District, I am so glad to be reconnecting with you today, and I'm glad we could have this conversation about all of these incredibly important matters related to the school district and the education of our young people. I want to thank you for your time and wish you and your staff only the very best going forward from here.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Tomorrow and Wednesday on the morning show, we're going to be showcasing the great work of one of Wisconsin's finest writers, Michael Perry. He has been a morning show guest any number of times. Tomorrow, you will hear a newly recorded interview with Michael Weiss. And then on Wednesday, I'm going to be replaying excerpts from several of those previous morning show conversations. The reason for the attention to Michael Perry is that he is coming to the Racine Theater Guild for a performance this Saturday, the 1st of February. So that will be coming up over the next couple of days. On Thursday and Friday, back to weightier matters, namely the proposed power plant in the town of Paris. And we'll be hearing from a concerned environmental group on Thursday. On Friday, we will hear from a spokesman of We Energies about what is behind this proposed power plant. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, wgtd.org. And you can subscribe to the morning show as a podcast and hear a different podcast, hear a different morning show 7 days a week. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Be sure to look for the morning show with Greg Berg. Our weather forecast includes high winds. In fact, we're under a wind advisory most of the day, winds up to 40 miles per hour. Sunny skies, but some clouds rolling in over the afternoon. Our high today, a balmy 46 degrees. Overnight low of 23, and those very windy conditions will continue. Partly sunny tomorrow, still windy, maybe not quite as windy, a high of 43 degrees. We could see a high of 53 by Thursday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine, Elk